This
picture
is our
me.
Christmas card for everyone. And Ryan, you're the sexy Mrs. Claus. Ron, you're the sexy elf. And I've somehow been transformed into some sort of smoking Santa thing. We don't like this, okay? It's like so offensive culturally to have taken my face and made it look like we can't use this. At least Ryan, that lady actually in the middle on the left.
She's not ginger though.
She looked, no, but come on, John.
That, I mean, you've got to match. Ryan, you've got to match cuffs and collars.
I think she's a porn star. I think I recognise her.
She looks like you. And I can actually even see John. I can see you.
You can see me in Mrs. Claus, is that what you're saying?
Oh, wait, that's me. Oh, that is not something anyone wants to see.
The only one we have a massive problem with is me. I think we should just scrap the AI guys and just dress in the outfits. Like, I just wanted to be like a wholesome Santa Claus, not this smoking charlatan that we've got here.
I think the one thing that we have learned is that there is still some definite bias in the AI model, Cindy.
That is something that we've learned. Well highlighted, John. I'm quite impressed by your awareness on that. That's really good.
I'm happy with how it's come out.
with an enormous rack, it would seem.
But Ryan, you're the only one that looks like you.
I don't, but I'm taking
it. You have to do your boob face, Ryan.
What's my boob face?
Come on, every man's got a boob face.
Is that like motorboating, or what is it you're talking about here?
What's your boob face, John?
Oh. John's always surprised. He's always surprised by them.
Like that.
So you're talking about a face for when you see them, or you're close
to
them?
Depends on what you mean by close to them.
Welcome to another episode of Digitals in a Cruel World, and a ho 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 for those of you joining us just before Christmas. We're feeling festive and are looking forward to taking some time off. Joined today by quite possibly the sexiest Mrs. Claus that I have ever seen. It is Ryan Pearcy. Ryan, how are you?
I'm good, Indy, and thank you for calling me a ho. I assume that's what you called us when you said ho ho ho. That sums us up. For some context there, being the sexy Mrs. Claus, AI did not get me correct, I think we can say, when we stuck my image.
AI got you correct. AI made you a very sexy woman. And
I'll take that.
I would check you out on the street with that sort of look. What do you think, John, who was also a super sexy elf, slightly like an accountant elf?
My response to Ryan is sexy Mrs. Claus goes along the lines of something like that.
It's like having someone from, was it from The Simpsons or Family Guy? What is that guy? Just complete creep and pervert. Anyway, you should feel dirty.
You're being objectified, Ryan. That's what it is. For the first time in your entire life.
I semi like it. I won't lie. It's an odd feeling.
Guys, shall we kick on with the nap news for this week?
Sage have released their 2023 results, and there are some big numbers in there in terms of their overall performance and things. Top line turnover was up by 11%. Profitability was up by 10% as well. And they're saying that the overall growth with their Sage Business Cloud umbrella of products was running at about 25%. So incredible set of numbers really from Sage. Mirrors the growth that we saw when they released their 2022 results as well. We don't quite have the financial statements available for view at the moment, so this is just a summary overview that came from their investor call. As soon as we get those, we will definitely dig into those and see what else is going on with their investments, and if we can break down some of that growth in the Sage Cloud division as well, because as we know in the past, a lot of that was being driven by the acquisition of Intacct historically and some of the other newer products like HR products and other things that were coming into the mix.
I wonder if the migration from their desktop products across to the cloud would contribute to that growth.
I think we should be able to see some of that in the results, hopefully, when we get into the financial statements at some point.
Intrigued to dive into it more. I'm sure one of our listeners will send us a link afterwards clarifying it all, as he normally does. But we also got some results from Xero. So Xero's operating revenue was up 21% year on year at the end of their first half of 2023. And their EBITDA was up 97 million year on year. And their operating income was up 47 million. but their free cash flow, money that they actually had to spend, was up a whopping 91 million from what, 15 to 106. So they've got a lot of money now that they can use effectively. And I know that when they posted about this on LinkedIn, I did say, oh, they can go and buy some products out there, joking that they might go and buy Sage or QuickBooks or something. And they said, no, they're not planning anything. They've just got money if they want to. We got nothing out of them, basically.
The winners for the Zero Beautiful Business Fund were announced a couple of weeks ago. They had around 5,500 applications for the prize fund, which was $750,000 New Zealand, and there were four categories, 28 winners selected. The four categories: strengthening community connection, innovating for sustainability, trailblazing with technology, and upskilling for the future. There were the main category winners. We Care Connect was a charity volunteer organization from Australia, the Together Project in the UK. Innovating for Sustainability was Constantia Food Club, which was a South African-based food buying club. And another UK-based business who was also in that regional category winner was called Oat Float. And then Trailblazing with Technology had Buzz Burrows, which was a New Zealand-based business. And another UK winner was Let's Go Physio. And then the Upskilling for the Future was the UK-based company called The Seam. And they provide a digital platform for highly skilled makers from countries to be paid in exchange for offering specialist wardrobe care and repair services to those who need it. So congratulations to all of the winners.
I don't know if you saw what Oat Float did. I quite like the little thing they do. They're basically a van. They drive around with oats in, and you can go and top up your oats. And I think cereal was from them. It's a zero waste delivery service. That was really cool. I like that.
It's particularly good if you keep horses.
It's a horse-specific business.
There's another one in Canada that was called More Granola, which was similar. Again, it's a repurposing. It's really, it's clever.
In repurposing of granola.
Oh, redistributing. That's a word, not repurposing.
Redistributing.
I don't want it after it's been used.
It's been chewed.
They can keep their granola after they've had it.
The good thing about oats is they're very good for you. Gut bacteria. It's like proper gut bacteria food, right? So that's why you should eat lots of porridge, things like that.
That seems to be the most sensible thing you've ever said on this podcast.
I know. I really thought there was some sort of
joke coming. It's just, he really cares about his gut.
Somebody's got to.
Weirdly, out of all the time I've been doing this, the most sensible thing you've ever said has made me laugh the most. It's so unexpected. Oh, God. Sorry. I don't know who's next.
It's me. Staying on the topic of Xero, I have launched a new tax manager feature in Xero HQ. So this is an iteration of what you already had in there, because you were able to keep a track of your MTD, VAT connections in Xero HQ previously. They've bundled this all together into one place, and what you can do is start to connect other things like corporation tax, personal tax to that. So you can see not just the VAT deadlines and whether or not those MTD connections are still active or not, but you can also then start to see the personal tax deadlines and the corporate tax deadlines as well. And I think there's an expectation that over time this will be built out with more and more functionality, so you can see how much is owed, be able to search across multiple clients and things. So I think it's a great little piece of product development. It's probably not that far removed from what we see in some other accounting practice management solutions already. But to have that kind of data in one place is great. And they're talking about integrating that with XPM as well, so Xero Practice Manager. So you've got that in both sides of the story. And obviously, Xero kind of bringing together those two products more coherently at the moment with the single client record work that they've done in the past.
Yeah, it's definitely part of a strategy for Xero to get the UK using more of XPM and build out Xero HQ alongside it. So we'll see if it works. But for us that aren't in XPM all the time, it still helps. I dabble around Xero HQ, and I think that's going to help me. Slightly different, Xero has launched a partnership with AWS over in Australia and New Zealand. And to help businesses that are starting that journey into utilizing cloud platforms, it's using AWS Lift program, which means they can secure just under 85,000 in US dollars over 12 months in free credits on the AWS platform. So if the businesses are trying to get into utilizing systems in the cloud, they can get some free services via AWS if you're a Xero customer. but not in the UK as yet. Hopefully it'll come over to the UK soon.
It's exciting news. Also, more Zero stuff is that for the US products in particular, they have released a new automated sales tax capability, which has been built and developed in partnership with Avalara. So for people who are not familiar with Avalara, it's something that's been in the Zero ecosystem, but also in other accounting app ecosystems for quite a while. And they help with all sorts of things like cross-border taxation, VAT, and now sales taxation over in the US. And for anyone that's trying to work with clients that are operating in the US, the sales taxation requirements over there are horrendous. They are shockingly bad. You've got different rates, different entry points for every different state, plus different regulations and different rules as well in terms of how the filings and the compliance works as well. Think of it as like VAT, European VAT, but about 500 times worse, as only the US could do. And that's exactly what Avalara and Zero are trying to fix now, because it is frankly a bit of a nightmare and you need something like this to help it make it work easier.
Yeah, we tend to talk a bit about Avalara when I'm referencing Zero over in the US. I think they're just deepening their partnership, aren't they? They're making that work more effectively. And I believe you could use Avalara inside Zero in the past, but much more automated now, which looks better. We had an announcement on the last show regarding Zero Pay. I think that's what it's called. At least paying bills directly from within Zero platform. We talked to Alex from Schirmeister, announced at the Zero Roadshows. Want to just touch a little bit more on what that was, because we mentioned it, but we didn't dive into it. So for those of you that have not seen this, it has been announced you are able to use it at present. You effectively can enable bulk bill payments entirely inside the Zero platform. So when you go and you select your bills to pay and you create a batch payment run, you can select a direct transfer now and push it through open banking, assuming that you have connected your bank account to Zero and your bank supports bulk payments via open banking. Not every bank account does this, so make sure you do check that. But from what I've seen, and we've had some of our staff playing with this, it is very slick, probably because they are using the Cresco tool to power it. And we've talked about Cresco a lot, got a very powerful open banking tool. Now, at the moment, it's only available for British pounds, so you can only spend in native currency in the UK. But I believe there is a plan to roll that into foreign currencies, because we know that Cresco can do that as well. So I believe there's a plan to roll it into foreign currencies in the longer term.
And more Zero updates and news. And this, again, was something that Alex referred to when we spoke to him, is that e-invoicing has officially launched in the Zero UK product. This has been driven by the awareness of the fact that e-invoicing is becoming more and more prevalent in Australia, New Zealand. That's already there, and the government are starting to mandate e-invoicing. We're also starting to see this increasingly happen across the European Union. And the technology, of course, that all of this is built on, PEPOL, is a European standard. Zero did buy Tickstar 2 years ago, something like that, which was an e-invoicing platform. So you can, at the moment, receive e-invoices direct into Zero, and they're going to start asking partners or businesses to receive our subscription bill by e-invoice. And the next iteration of that will be that you'll be able to send e-invoices out from Zero itself. So this will be built on top of, for anyone that's used the Zero to Zero network, will be effectively an iteration of that and a way of getting stuff out to your customers. One thing that I am aware of, which wasn't mentioned in the chat and it's not mentioned in the blog either, is that it appears at the moment that if you have a non-VAT or a non-VAT registered subscription at the moment, is you can't receive e-invoices. I don't know if that has changed, but that's something I picked up in the forums a few days ago. So I think it's only relevant for VAT registered businesses that are on a standard subscription or above where VAT applies.
I have something from Sage, given that at the start of the year that we were talking so much about ChatGPT and AI. Aaron Harris has said that the future for Sage is centered on AI, or it spells out at least a vision for Sage and artificial intelligence that involves digital assistants and large language models. He doesn't really go into the detail of what specifically, only that there's a couple of tools that they are trying to roll out that will be more narrow in focus on AI. What is named is a new digital assistant and some sort of recently developed inbox tool. And they are leaning heavily on reusable AI capabilities. So rather than doing a sort of taking a generalized approach or generalized functionality that you'll see in some of the other accounting techs, they're saying that they will focus on just doing the one thing very well. I'm not really sure that tells us much other than Sage is looking at AI.
They have to, don't they? Because Intuit have said that they're doing a lot with AI. Xero have said they're doing a lot with AI. Sage have to say they're doing a lot with AI. It's good that they're obviously doing something. I think we need to hear a bit more over time, but
something
positive.
Something big's
coming.
You'd hope that Sage realised that they're already doing something with AI, given that they acquired AutoEntry a few years back, and that is under the umbrella of AI. Maybe a bit like everyone else, they just think that AI means large language models. So maybe we're going to be seeing PEG version 2.0 at some point in the future.
Bring back the PEG. Moving slightly to the left side in Sage, but into a specific area, being Sage Intacct. We've got some enhancements in their product. They've now enabled multi-tier ownership structures and the consolidation inside Intacct of those multi-tier businesses. So if you've got subsidiaries within subsidiaries, being able to consolidate all the way up to do a group overall structure, but also in those kind of daughter-son relationships inside that group structure as well. So depending on what level you want to report on, you can do that inside Sage Intacct. Now, they've enhanced their project management area to bring KPI reporting directly inside that, mostly for managing resource utilization. So we have to see how you're utilizing your team across various projects. They've gone very niche into developing an area for the supporting church finances and integration into church management systems. That's how niche this podcast is getting. We're talking about church management systems and church financial reporting. So that's how it has come from Sage Intacct. And then they've got a few other things more focused around the US regarding integration with PwC and 1099 e-filing.
Well, I'm blown away by the church accounting requirements. Positively speechless. QuickBooks are into it, as we know, acquired TradeGecko a few years ago, and they have been slowly releasing the features from TradeGecko into the various parts of the QuickBooks ecosystem. The first new features that we're starting to see is the ability to monitor the fulfillment of sales orders. So effectively, this is where you've got sales orders and you're about to send stock out. You can start to do that within the QuickBooks product. The equivalent in the Xero or Sage ecosystem would be using things like Unleashed or Deer or Sim7. We're also now seeing the ability to do enhanced stock counts and stock adjustments individually or in bulk so that you can bring those in. So that was a feature that wasn't there that enabled you to do that en masse. So that's a significant improvement. You can also now have alerts and notifications when you've got either low stock or want to be able to automate some of the purchase order creation. So off the back of notifications or particular triggers. And you can connect QuickBooks now to things like Shopify and Amazon, eBay, etc. So anywhere you're doing online sales, ordering and stuff, and you can connect that seamlessly all the way through. So this is a pretty chunky update from QuickBooks, and it effectively is consolidating that TradeGecko capability plus some enhanced stock management features into one singular place. It's really interesting. We knew that Xero was starting to do something similar with their Locate acquisition, which was all happening in the US. And for them, with QuickBooks taking the lead again, they're going to have to follow that trajectory and try and improve on that side of things.
So there is some more QuickBooks news straight from the QuickBooks Connect 2023. The changes to the QuickBooks Online Accountant, the new QuickBooks Ledger functionality. So for those accountants who have clients that are very small or don't maintain their books regularly, there's some functionality around client management that allows information to be added in a much more standardized format and then easily links to ProConnect Tax and the bank feeds that also leverage some of the AI functionality. And it's a much better way to manage smaller clients.
This is similar to what Xero have done with their Ledger license and what Sage have been doing with their free license. I believe it's only available in the US at the moment, but is expected to be rolled out to Canada and the UK and Australia in due course. Most of it, admittedly, focused at the moment on personal tax returns over in the US. So very small clients. What we'd deem a fit for very small self-assessment over here. I think I touched on this with Aaron and Joanne a while ago, but in essence, it's that cheap, quick and dirty license that means people don't have to pay your fortune just to be compliant, especially with eventually, making tax digital working in the UK.
Yeah, who knows if we'll ever stick to that timetable. further QuickBooks news, QuickBooks Online Payroll has a whole host of additional HR functionality that's been brought into it. Again, quite a lot of this was announced at QuickBooks Connect. They brought in some features like, for example, as an employee, you can put in what your preferred name might be. There's also the ability to put things like departments, managers, emergency contacts in the core HR functionality, I guess. And it now gives you the ability to upload profile pictures if you want to, which of course means navigating payroll a bit easier, particularly if you've got a large workforce. As a consequence of those new fields that they're adding, to be able to search and to see a bit more structural information around your HR data and information, that lends itself to just making the product a little bit easier. But there are some limited features that are also being launched into QuickBooks Payroll Premium and Elite, which is to make the I-9 process a little bit easier. That's the process around which you're checking things like employment eligibility, and there's a new workflow that's been built around that to make lives a little bit simpler on that respect.
And then another quick one from QuickBooks. They are stopping the mint. So all of the minters need to move across to Credit Karma. Mint, the business that was a cloud-based personal finance app, is no longer going to be operational from January the 1st, 2024, and they're consolidating the experience across to Credit Karma, which they've already started some of the migration of some of the main elements. But there's one thing that if you are into using personal finance apps to manage budgets, that they are not allowing you to create monthly budgets in Credit Karma. So you'll have to use a different personal financial app for that. But end of the year, that will be the end of Mint.
I think this is indicative of a few personal finance apps closing down. We've had a couple in the UK, like Money Manager went fairly recently, and another one went as well. And I think the challenge is like making money out of these products, because quite often they have a bit of a freemium type setup, and so just connecting your accounts through open banking, etc., and monitoring your spend that way is the basic requirements, but people don't seem to be willing to pay for that or anything extra on top.
With the whole thing about a business being a feature rather than a business, and this is an example of it. It's a feature of another product as opposed to a whole business in its own right.
Absolutely. And products like Credit Karma, they're relatively like low load opportunities. They're presenting your personal credit data, which is relatively easy to get hold of, but you're only having to generally connect to one API because you're going to one single provider of that information. You can try and cross and upsell people into loans and credit cards and other things. So you've got referral income opportunity out of the back of it. So you can see why the personal finance apps are struggling, whereas the credit monitoring ones are probably surviving just about.
Yeah, we're in a period of consolidation. I keep saying it. We're getting less and less apps out there. I think that will expand into 2024. Final few things from QuickBooks, because they did the QuickBooks Connect over in the US, there was a lot of announcements. We've gone through a lot already. Some of these we may have touched on in the past before, but just some quick ones. They've made some tweaks to QuickBooks Online Accountant. They've expanded roles and permissions to be a bit more granular, more customizable. We've got chart of accounts templates and improved the ability to add clients directly into the system. And they've also expanded on QuickBooks Online Advanced with a fixed asset module, some approval workflows, custom reports and charts, and expanded role-based access controls.
I feel like I've been discriminated against. Can I lodge a complaint with HR?
I don't know who's HR, but yes, you can. Our HR.
Yeah, to our HR, to the podcast.
Yes.
I think
that's one of Lee's responsibilities now.
No, it is Lee. You're now ahead of HR, okay?
We take it. Yeah, but what action can he possibly take?
He can write Ryan a written warning for...
Why Ryan? He didn't do anything wrong.
Well, neither did I. But he can write Ryan up for having
a large rack.
Unexpectedly large rack.
You do not punish someone, Dutch or otherwise, for having big boobs.
Yeah. I'm intimidating all the boys with my large rack, and I should be written up about it. That's what should happen.
I don't mind you having a large rack. I just do wish you wouldn't touch them so much on this.
Well, when you've got it, you have to flaunt it. That's what I believe in.
Really?
I'm delighted to say that I've got Michael Wood on as one of our guests. Hopefully going to tell us a little bit about the history of Dext stroke Receipt Bank, because that was what he was involved in the early days. And obviously now moved on to forming Translucent with an all-star cast of investors, it seems, as well. So definitely want to find out a little bit more about that. So, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And let's get straight into it, because as I mentioned, you were one of the founders of Receipt Bank, and it went through a number of name changes, obviously, over time. But what was the inspiration behind that, and why start a business like that back in the day?
I was running my own business in 2007 and decided to do the books myself, handed them to my accountant. And at the end of the year, she said, normally, Michael, to do your year-end accounts would be £2,000. But you've managed to make such a hash of this in MYOB, it's going to cost you about £4,000. She said, look, why don't you use this? Because I don't think you'll be able to muck it up. And what she introduced me to was Cashflow with a K, which was the first cloud accounting package in the UK, and actually one of the first in the world in 2007. There's probably sub 1,000 businesses around the world using cloud accounting. So I was very early, and I went through 3 years using Cashflow. The business I was running was a virtual marketing director for a number of businesses, and I was helping to grow an accountancy practice. I saw firsthand how they and other accountancy practices were working at the time, but also I'd seen this limitation of cloud accounting. Before, you had cloud accounting and you had, let's say, a Sage 50 file or equivalent. Whoever has the file is the master of the data. And hence, you had the old style workflow of the shoebox or the Tesco carrier bag of receipts or the files of documents. You had to take it to whoever had the file. For a business of my size, it was pretty much always the accountant. Yeah, the accountant had sort of pinged me a couple of times. Oh, Michael, you're going to drop the paperwork off. But I'd got into this terrible habit of putting it off and then eventually getting an email from the accountant saying, Michael, we don't have time to deal with it anymore. If you want these expenses to be included, you're going to have to spend this weekend doing data entry. And so that's what was happening. So I felt that cloud accounting introduced this unexpected inefficiency. And so I looked around for a solution. I came across a company called Receipt Farm. And the Receipt Farm pitch was really simple. We'll send you an envelope every month. You stuff your receipts and invoices into the envelope, send it back to us, and we'll scan it, extract the data, and make it available for you in the cloud. I was punching the air. This is brilliant. I've solved this problem. This is fantastic. But there was two problems. One was it wasn't integrated with any of the accounting packages, nor was there an ability for an accountant or bookkeeper to log in to my account. And the email I sent them was, you know what, love the service, happy to become a subscriber, but are you going to integrate with the accounting packages, and are you going to create the accountant log on? They wrote back really quickly, dear Mr. Wood, thank you very much for your feedback, but we're closing down today. I wrote back saying, well, then can I buy it? And that's how Receipt Bank came along. So whereas Receipt Farm were trying to sell this to each SMB one by one, we felt it's a far more interesting proposition to be able to go to firms and say, look, you have 100, 200, 300 clients, and you have an incredibly inefficient workflow, and we can therefore sell you this whole workflow. And of course, it then got supercharged by the iPhone and email, which we replaced the envelopes with.
Michael, was there, like, the core software that you bought, was there much you had to change on it to make it into Receipt Bank?
Huge amount. It was everything from just the fields to be extracted. One of the first accountants we worked with was, well, this is great, but you've got to extract invoice number. If you don't have invoice number, this is not helpful. Obviously, there's a lot of code in integrating with something like Xero and things like that. Those huge amounts of features for users is a very small application that they basically built as a experiment to test demand.
Without making this sound too simplistic, was it as simple as saying, look, your marketing strategy is not correct in terms of you're going after the wrong customers? And in terms of buying Receipt Farm, what did you actually get? Did you just get the software, or did you get a team of people that you could take on a journey with you as well?
Yeah, I was able to look at Receipt Farm straight away and say, look, the customer acquisition cost of going after an SMB one by one in the UK is just not going to happen. This is pre-Facebook. The only game in town was Google AdWords. And of course, Google AdWords is dependent on someone having the intent of searching for, I want receipt scanning for Xero. In 2010, I think Xero had about 3,000 clients in the UK. So how many of them feel like I do, there was a problem with scanning receipts and invoices? How many of them are searching for that each day or week? You can see why AdWords wasn't going to work. We paid £1 for the code. We paid a few thousand pounds to the founders to do some handover from their team to our team. But no team came with it. No limited company came with it. No clients came with it. By the time we concluded the transaction, they'd already emailed their entire client bank saying we're closing down. So we got a slightly fleshed out idea.
And what lessons have you taken from that into creating Translucent? Because I would counteract that the success of products like Receipt Bank going through this kind of partner channel with accountants has been really great. But it's also, in some respects now for certain apps, is sort of a little bit damaging because everyone feels like that's the only channel that you can sell to, whereas actually potentially going direct to market is much more beneficial.
So there's definitely things we got very right and very wrong with Receipt Bank. One of the things we got very right was saying, oh no, this is for the partner channel. Xero had gone through a similar journey. Xero took 2 or 3 years to work out, are we direct or partner channel and things like that. What we got completely wrong was we never understood how big the scale of the opportunity was. So we absolutely thought, we're launching a UK service for UK accountants, and that'll be a very nice business. Thank you very much. And when the phone started to ring from Australia and from Canada, et cetera, it was proper head scratching. Why are they calling us? Don't they have people locally to do this? And it's a cliche nowadays to say that sort of SaaS companies and software companies are global. But that was something I don't think really was understood at the time. And certainly if it was, we didn't understand. Often at Receipt Bank, we did have an advantage. Our solution was applicable to pretty much 100% of clients. Any application where it's only suitable for a minority of clients always had a much, much harder job getting the interest of the accountant to learn this software, upskill your team, roll it out to your clients, etc. There's also the thing that's changed hugely is when we at Receipt Bank phoned up accountancy firms in 2011, 2012, no software company had ever called them before. Whereas today, the reaction might be, please, you're the 10th software vendor to call me today. How did you get my number?
Michael, it's interesting. So when you were at Receipt Bank, how big was the core team and what point did you decide to take on investment? Because Receipt Bank went through multiple rounds and then to eventual exit. At what point did you say, okay, this is when I need to take on investment? Because as John said, you've got the all-star team now of investors. So I'm quite curious to see the logic then as it was and what's the logic now?
I think it was July 2010. I phoned up Alexis Pren because he and I had a conversation about we'd like to go into business together. So I phoned him up and said, look, I think this is what we should do. He already owned another software development company. So we brought over a couple of the engineers and we slowly and steadily built up the team from then. It was bootstrapped for then. You'd go into the people that were calling themselves VCs in London at the time and they'd be, yeah, sounds interesting. We'd love to see 3 years P&L and 3 years balance sheet. You know, this doesn't feel like a VC conversation. So we had two or three sort of dead-end conversations like that, and we did an EIS round.
Was that like a friends and family thing, or how did that work?
It was wider than that because Alexis and I worked in an investment management firm before. So actually, we knew some IFAs that knew high net worth individuals well and things like that. So we were able to go out and say, this is what we're doing. Exactly. But even then, we were properly motoring. This was not Mr. Angel, do you want to take a huge leap of faith on this business? We're probably growing 300% a year. We've already got interest in Australia and we've opened out there. And the revenue numbers as headlines wouldn't have been that impressive. But the story was pretty fleshed out.
Did you take institutional investment in the end?
Yeah. So Kennett did the Series A. And Insight did the Series B.
What year was that, Michael?
Series B was definitely summer 2017. And the Series A was the winter of 14-15.
So that's very different to what
you're doing.
With Translucent.
We said it was an all-star list. Why don't you tell us who the all-star list is?
Can you order them as well so that we know which one you prefer the most? So down from like 10 to 1 or something.
Yeah, we'll let you choose the criteria for what order you're putting them in. It could be like the one that's most likely to be an asshole or the one that you like
the most. The stingiest one. Oh, yeah. Hold on.
Yeah. Stingiest, yeah.
So the list actually came about in a very back-to-front way because there's no number for how many businesses are multi-entity around the world. You can't get it from anywhere. Where that fantastic list of investors came from was basically me phoning people up in the industry whose views I really respected and saying, I think this is a huge opportunity. Do you agree? And they were, we agree, there's this huge multi-entity opportunity. And then going back a couple of months later and say, actually, I have decided to start the business and thank you for your help. Well, if you'd like to invest, that would be very welcome.
So who are some of these names, Michael? Because I've heard a few bandied about.
Yeah, so Gary Turner, ex-MD of Xero, is probably the one people would most instantly recognize. But also from Xero, there's Craig Walker, who is the co-founder of Xero and original CTO. Big names that people, would be people like Guy Pearson at Ignition, or Stuart McLeod at Carbon, or Dwayne Jackson, who founded Cashflow. I'm now going to be embarrassed by missing people out and not thinking of people.
This is why we conned you into ranking them. I think you missed Pierre from...
Libio, yes.
From Libio,
yes.
He's not popular enough. That's what I understood. It's like, okay, you'll know this person. Five-a-side football team, done. You don't need any.
I've missed like this Harsh, who's now the CEO of TransferWise. Yeah, there's all sorts of sort of other people.
Has John Toon invested yet? Because he's talked about his many investments before on the pod. So just interested. So
John really tried, but we had some standards. It was mainly moral rather than financial. So
yeah, that makes sense.
It was just you know what it's like. You've got to.
Yeah, it would bring the brand down, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't need that groovy money.
Don't know where it's come from.
It's all very clean.
Translucent's a very different company and we're in very different times. So to give a quick sort of précis of what Translucent is doing, we think there's an incredibly exciting opportunity in multi-entity. So the preeminent accounting solutions are always single entity solutions. And there is now a very large number of businesses stringing copies of these software together to meet their accounting needs. So what we will do is we will sit on top of these SMB accounting solutions. We're not looking to replace them, but we just sit on top and say we will give you that single financial system of record. So for all your intra-entity workflows, VAT, payroll, et cetera, keep using Xero. Fantastic software. We're never going to do that. It's great. But for all your multi-entity workflows, Translucent is the best in the world at doing those.
You mentioned a few products already, and that there's plenty more to go out there. How quickly do you need to develop into those products to get ahead of anyone else that might try to compete?
As I said, 10 years ago, we were in a place where the CFO and the accountant were very rarely sold software. Now they're inundated, and frankly, it's a mess. This decade, we're going to see a consolidation. So what we're doing is we're building a large number of apps. So our first app, Search, we released in Q2. We released Group Reporting in Q3. This quarter, we're releasing two. We're releasing Live Sheets, which is a sort of live integration with Google Sheets. We're also releasing Intercompany. In Q1, we're releasing Bank Consolidation. And we haven't yet made public what we're doing in Q2, Q3, Q4. But we've got a long list of about 30 plus apps that we're building. So we're saying to our clients two things. First, we're going to give you that single financial system of record because you're multi-entity and you don't currently have it. And secondly, we're going to give you a single app stack and we're going to get rid of this mess of different apps with different permissions, with different definitions, with different, you know, ways of calculating metrics and all this other stuff. We're going to give you all in one place. And Ryan, that really is the point that we've raised money and built a much bigger team from the beginning, because we need to be launching an app a quarter. And each one of those apps probably has a number of incumbents that already exist in the Xero App Store. And we expect our apps to be competitive on their own with those within 6 months. So we need a larger team to build our app after app after app. And we're able to say to accounting firms and to CFOs, look, we can give you everything that you need in one place.
So if you're consolidating everything in, at some point, there'll be an app that does expense capture and processing.
I am still a shareholder of Dex, and I am under non-competes with Dex. You're absolutely right. I don't think it will be, but I think it will be partnership rather than us building, because there's certain ones that it just makes sense to partner on rather than build. And that obviously is one.
Can I ask a question, Michael, and I think you've alluded to this, but why Translucent? What is the problem you're trying to fix?
So it is around, there's two problems I'm trying to fix. The short-term problem I'm super interested in is this multi-entity problem. We had this problem ourselves at Receipt Bank. circa 2016, 8 entities around the world, QBO in France, and a zero in every other country. We can say things like, oh, there's a problem of just having a consolidated P&L. So yeah, that's one problem. Another problem is time to close the books at the end of the month. And then you get other really funny problems. As one CFO, she described it to me beautifully. She said, I just want to see yesterday's invoices. And right now I'm having to go into each copy of accounting software, download CSV, etc. And that's what we talk about being a single financial system of record.
So the question would be, from me then at least, why didn't Receipt Bank at the time consider an ERP?
We moved to NetSuite in the end. But there's no question, it's a very heavy duty solution. You're talking minimum 6 month prep to set up NetSuite. You'll be running at least one quarter of duplicate books. You'll be hiring a couple of members of your finance team that have run NetSuite before, because you can't just put NetSuite in and say, oh, have a week of training and it will all be fine. You've got to migrate all your add-ons, because the integrations with Xero are not the same integrations with NetSuite. So you're not just changing the core financial system. All the other workflows need to change. You'll probably be setting up a data warehouse project to get your finance numbers available to the sales team, the owners. What we think we're sitting in is this huge gap between Xero and NetSuite.
And so I can understand that from an operational point of view, having visibility of all your outstanding invoices or who owes you what and things at any one point in time. But once you get into sort of the specific operational issues of, say, a particular country, for example, is that something you're going to be looking at to bring into Translucent as well? So, for example, employee expenses or some of those other areas?
What I used to do at Receipt Bank when my hand was on the tiller is stay in bookkeeping. Do not get involved in accounting, because as soon as you're involved in accounting, you're doing all sorts of things. Now, of course, with Receipt Bank, we were slightly pulled into accounting because we're capturing VAT in the UK and GST in Australia. But generally, we try and stay out of accounting and into bookkeeping. And because we're sitting on top of Penny Lane in France, Datev in Germany, Exact in the Netherlands, Xero or QBO in the UK, or Sage in the UK, we're steering the same direction.
That's really interesting in terms of like the bookkeeping conundrum, if you like. But is there a strategic risk for you that, for example, someone like Xero do finally get themselves together and expand into Europe, for example? Because the reason this opportunity presents itself is because of the sort of the fracturing of that sort of GL bookkeeping market at the moment. And no one player really has managed to get a foothold in more than a handful of countries, really.
So Xero was quite progressive in opening new countries. If we say sort of 2006 or 2015, you probably could characterize them about a country a year. That slowed dramatically. I can't think of a country they've really entered since about 2017. Intuit was sort of matching them toe to toe for a while, but now having withdrawn from France this year, it doesn't look like they're geographically expanding. I'd never say never. And yes, it would be more competitive to us if that happened. But the way we look at the market, we don't see it happening, certainly at any speed. So
you're saying you see this big consolidation, everything coming down into one or a few products. That's where you think things will go. One of the benefits of separate products is you can pick best of breed, and if something doesn't work in one area, you can just switch that out for something else. Do you see it that it's inevitable that everything always expands and contracts, and you're seeing the next realm being contraction? You want to be at the forefront of that. Is that kind of why you've placed yourself there?
In the mid-90s, a guy called James Bartsdale made a very famous quote of the only way to make money is by bundling and unbundling. What he's referring to then is basically when you have a huge technology change like cloud, because there's this completely new ground to be colonized, you see this unbundling and this fragmentation of companies. Exactly as you say, Ryan, you get best of breed because they're the people who can do it. But in the absence of those big changes, you then get the bundling happening again. If you took the entire cloud accounting software market from 2010 to 2017, you had real innovation. But if you take 2017 to 23, I'm not saying every product hasn't improved. They have, but the rate of innovation has dropped off very significantly.
50 expense capture apps now. You do get the odd thing, as you say, but there's a lot of recycling of ideas out there.
There is. And that's why when I look at that list of 30 apps in the app stores, we don't look at the incumbent as, oh my God, that's an incredibly fast moving business. We instead think, oh, we could get 80% of their functionality in a pretty quick time. So we absolutely believe we're in a bundling era. And there's a US company called Rippling. They have just opened in the UK. And Rippling are the ones that pioneered this business model. What they do is start as payroll, but then once they've got the employee graph, they launch app after app, device management, password management, maternity, paternity leave, whatever it might be. And they've shown the power of this business model. So we're really excited about it.
And so what are your plans now, Michael, in terms of like rollout? Is it building for scale immediately? And how do you see things like AI for Translucent going forward as well?
We're a super young company. We're like just over a year old. So for all of 23, we've just been building. January the 1st, 24, I think we're going to be in a place where we're ready to start selling. That doesn't mean we don't have clients today. I'm really pleased to say we've got hundreds and hundreds of businesses have already signed up and added their entities, and it's been fantastic. But we don't really advertise or show up at events or do anything yet. We're very much sort of under the radar. But in the next year, that will change. In terms of product, we expect to launch an app a quarter. We can go faster than that. We're not sure it's that helpful to go faster than that. We've already taken on some phenomenal AI data scientists, and we're pretty excited about some of the announcements we're going to be able to make next year. And we think AI is going to just play the most enormous role around financial data.
Just to follow up on that, talking about how AI is going to be phenomenal dealing with financial data, we hear that quite a lot, but we struggle to actually see something tangible in that respect. So did you have any specific thoughts on that without maybe giving too much away?
Yeah, so...
Give it away, Mike.
So the way I said earlier, there's two reasons I started Translucent. One was the sort of shorter term. I really want to solve these problems for multi-entity businesses. The second one is this longer term. So if we can characterize 2010 to 2020 as that was the move of this data from desktop to the cloud, what's going to happen this decade is now this data is in the cloud, it's going to begin to become networked. And what that means is today, the data, I use a sort of computer gaming analogy, it's all single player. So whether you're in Receipt Bank, whether you're in Xero, you are looking at your P&L. And although you're looking at it in the cloud, the P&L you are looking at is recognizable to anyone using desktop Sage in 1995. They're looking at a computer screen. Yes, it's cloud, but it's fundamentally the same document. What we're going to see by 2030 is a whole lot of non-financial software get more closely integrated with financial software. So whether that's a Salesforce, whether it's Google Ads, whether it's HubSpot, whether it's Shopify, all these systems include the leading indicators to the numbers. And these are going to become widely available to the CFO, the finance team, the business, and the accounting firm. So the idea of the numbers sitting in, oh, here's my accounting finance stack, is going to be completely broken up with, you know, I can see all my leading indicators, and that's part of my core financial document.
Some organizations are already doing that. They're using, you mentioned data warehousing, they're using data lakes, using the APIs to connect to these multiple data sources and bringing them together. Is what you're saying, you're just sort of democratizing that for others that don't have those skills?
Or productizing it. Because it is, as you say, you can do it today at the data warehouse, but the cost and the skill set is insane. Let's pick the business running three wedding venues. The idea they're going to spin up their own data warehouse, not happening. Asking the average accountancy firm or even a top decile accountancy firm to spin up their own data warehouse is a big ask.
But lots of firms are doing that. Mike.
They are. I'm not saying it's not happening, but this comes back to, I can't remember who said it, but that great phrase of the future's already here. It's just not evenly distributed. So I'm not saying I'm claiming something that no one's ever heard of, but I'm just saying by 2030, that'll be one element. That'll be completely the norm. And the fact that you're seeing people already doing it, I think it's just further proof that we at Translucent are on the right direction. The other thing I'd say is right now, you still look at your numbers in a sort of single player way. What was my revenue last month? What was my net profit last month? What was my COGS last month? Whatever it might be. And what we're also going to see is this networking of this data, so that benchmarking is going to become default to all software. And again, that's something we're already seeing in finance software. We're already seeing it in procurement. We're already seeing it in apps like Shopify and Stripe, but we're going to see it become the absolute norm.
I've got one last question from my side, Michael. Being a fellow ginger, follically challenged nowadays, I was very interested and quite like the fact that the color of Receipt Bank back in the day was orange. Translucent is very white and some might say pale. Is that also related to being ginger?
Brian, you're picking up on my Scottish heritage now. So pale and ginger both mean a lot to me.
It works, branding.
Yeah, so the Receipt Bank orange was chosen for one reason, and that was Zero's got blue, Unleashed has red, Vend has green, and literally looking around, it's like, okay, no one's got orange. At Translucent, we've actually slightly been caught out at the level of demand we've had this year. So the branding, the website, etc., was all very placeholder.
I want some breaking news here. What color is it going to be?
I have some strong views, but I can't claim that the whole team agree with me.
Michael, you remind me of John when you answer a question. It's, can you just tell me, what colour is it? I'm more denied the presence of the colour gradient toward a...
Go to politics.
It's red.
Is that colour?
We've got you, Michael.
You do know, Michael, that yellow is the colour that most human eyes are most drawn to. So there you go.
I love yellow, but my product designers tell me that yellow doesn't work well in product. I thought yellow's pretty cool, but anyway, I don't think we're gonna get yellow.
All right, let's rule one out. Let's keep going through them.
Yeah, all the colours.
is it going to be black? It's going to be grey for all those financial controllers out there.
Michael, thank you very much for coming on.
No, thank you very much.
The best bits.
Or Ryan's best bits. Just take a screenshot of Ryan's best bits and that'll
be Ryan's best hits.
Best hits. Oh, good one, Ryan.
Wacka wacka.
Oh, fucking hell. What was that? That was loud in my ear.
Sorry.
That's your rack, Ryan. That's what happens when you take your bra off.
Boom.
I just needed to relax a bit.
If you're in France, do they not call a bra a defenestrator, which basically means to throw something out of a window? Pretty sure that's what it is.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Digitools in a Cruel World. If you've liked what you've heard, please could you like or give us a comment, help us boost the reach on the LinkedIn post because they are strangling our volume right now. And if you want to keep more in touch with Ryan, John or myself, subscribe to the Digital Disruptors site. It's the best way to get involved with our community and to keep updated on the latest events that we'll be planning, which hopefully we will have one in the new year. Give us a like, give us a comment, share your feedback, and catch you on the next one.